back into a fantastic new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We are so excited to be welcoming back one of our favorite groups to speak with, the co-directors of What Will the Neighbors Say, James Clements and Sam Hood Adrian. They are joining us to talk to us about the production being presented by What Will the Neighbors Say and Culture Lab, entitled Third Law, playing May 9th through the 26th at Culture Lab LIC. You can get your tickets and more information by visiting eventbrite.com. I am so excited to have the two of you back here. I cannot wait to dive into this show. And just reading a bit about it, I was like, okay, What Will the Neighbors Say? Check. I like that. Oh, a world premiere. Cool. Check. I like that. Interactive. Go on, you know. So, James, why don't we start with you? Can you tell us a bit about what Third Law is and is about?
Absolutely. So for me, I think the biggest kind of thematic concerns of the piece actually are about connection between people and about empowering audiences to an extent that we have not experienced very often in live performance. The idea is interesting. It's very different to what we've ever done before. It's not text-led. It's not story-led. It's system-led. So it's a kind of theatrical game that we are developing with a really, I mean, blue chip team of collaborators across the worlds of game design, theatrical design, really kind of a melting pot of different worlds and practices. And then the idea was to build a theatrical system where it brings the audience into the heart of art making using technology. So instead of the audience being passive, they're in fact active collaborators in the piece, working alongside us, the actors, and the designers in the booth to decide casting, design, and even narrative outcomes. We felt like coming out of the pandemic, we had all really craved communication and connection with one another in space. And I think for Sam and I, that was really a moment to consider why we were theater makers and why we do the work that we do. And for me, it really is the superpower of theater, right? Is that we're in space together in a one-of-a-kind moment that will never happen again the same way. And we have a harder case to make now to get people out of their houses and off Netflix to come to the theater, right? The theater is often expensive. You have to worry about childcare. You have to worry about travel. And so we felt like we had to rise to the challenge of that and give audiences something that you cannot get at home on Netflix.
That is fantastic. How exciting. Now, Sam, James touched on this a little, but I'd like to know, what Will the Neighbors Say? How did you two come upon this piece?
So it actually was born out of a BrickLab residency back in the fall of 2022 when they were still doing their performance lab. We had been selected with a cohort of folks that we work with as residents in sort of like the 21-22 season, and that residency got pushed because of the Omicron variant. They like totally went back to full shutdown and they said, you can have your residency, but it has to be, no one can come. You have to be masked. You can only have three people in space, like full on lockdown rules, or we can just push you to the next round, the next season. And we were like, well, wait, we'll do it later on. The original piece that we were supposed to do, for a number of reasons, no longer really worked. A lot of our collaborators due to COVID had moved away, changed focuses. So we were left with this residency spot and really no piece to do. And, you know, we had been talking about how do we bring audiences back all throughout the pandemic and wanted to find a way to give them agency over what they were seeing. So we got our fabulous director, Coral Cohen, to come in. We got a number of great divisors. We have our wonderful lighting designer, Jacqueline Scaletta, and our sound and video designer, Etty Pin, where we were like, this is the idea. We want to figure out how to bring audiences back. What does that mean? We want it to be interactive. We want it to be fun. And we basically sat in the studio for 10 days. We commissioned three playwrights to write us 7 to 10 minute plays just to have some text to play around with. And out of that 10 day development sort of process, Third Law was born. Now, I will say the initial nugget of an idea is nothing like what we actually have coming to the stage. It is so much more in-depth and curious, and the technological aspects of it, I don't understand how it works. Like, our designers are incredible, but I don't get it. And I, even being involved in it, it still blows my mind. So it was born out of that, and honestly born out of curiosity. We really wanted to think about and investigate, how do we get people interested? How do we get people back? And what does it mean to be back and together?
I love that. I love that. What a great journey the show has gone on. I mean, it's a shame that we had to wait a whole year for it, but now in the waiting, I guess things have just gotten better. So James, I want to come back to you, and I want to know, as we are rolling into, you know, the opening of the show, what has it been like developing the piece?
Well, I want to give a big shout out to our wonderful co-producers at Culture Lab, especially their current artistic director, Tess Hazem, and executive director, Edjo Wheeler. We've worked at Culture Lab on and off since 2018. So we've been long-term partners. Tess saw the workshop back in 2022 and kind of relentlessly championed the show since then. Really fought for it to be in their season. And for any of your listeners who haven't been, we can't recommend Culture Lab highly enough. Great quality visual arts, theater, music, live entertainment. It's a great space in Long Island City. But they're really trying to strengthen their theater programming at this moment, which is part of the reason they brought Tess into the role that she does now. So I think, kind of to talk about process first and foremost, for me is to talk about these really dynamic, imaginative partnerships, which I think is the way that indie theater is going to increasingly get made, is each of us brings what we have to the table, whether it's expertise, resources, let's be honest, money, whoever has what they have, and actually being able to sit down at the table and say, this is each organization's capacity. And kind of, it's almost like a form of creative or artistic bartering. And between kind of the support we got from Brick and me to 580 and Art New York and all the supporters of the project, gave us this great launch pad to then work with Culture Lab to build out what is going to be a 30-show, 3-week run. I mean, it's a really significant production. It's our longest ever run. I believe it is Culture Lab's longest ever run of a theatrical project. So first and foremost, it's just been so exciting to think, you know, how can we share this kind of very innovative, groundbreaking theatrical experience as widely and expansively as possible. So I think first and foremost, the process from a producing perspective has already been so creative. You know, the idea that, like, putting together a budget is creative, putting together a press release is creative. It's really felt from the top to the bottom of the production, really personal to Sam and I, and really challenging for what will the neighbors say in a way we're ready to be challenged. And then the rehearsal room, it's just a dream. We have the most amazing cast. We're led by the director, Carl Cohen, is a very experienced devised theater maker. So has this excellent way of making everyone's opinions in the room heard, stage managers, designers, actors, while also keeping us on track, because we're all, as your listeners can even hear from this interview, we're all good talkers. So both kind of lets our imaginations run wild and then also make sure that we have something to show you all on May 9th. And so it's been honestly really, really dreamy working on it, and very, very challenging. You know, it's not like necessarily the other work we've made. And in fact, it's not really like any work I've ever seen in New York. And so we're kind of building something new, which is quite, or feels quite rare. So challenging, but also very exciting and kind of rebellious and wild, because we don't have a playbook to follow in terms of being producers or in terms of being artists. So yeah, the rule book's torn up for this one. That's how it feels to me.
That is fantastic. Oh, this gets me even more excited about seeing the show. So, Sam, I want to know what this collaboration, this great immersive piece, is there a message or a thought that you're hoping that audiences take away from the piece?
Yeah, I really, my goal in developing this and our goal is for audiences to walk out sort of saying, what just happened, in the best possible way. I think that the interactive nature, you know, it's not immersive like Sleep No More. It is interactive, and it is giving the audience an active role in the art making process in a way that is very much against theatrical norms. I want them to walk away feeling like they had an impact on what they just saw, that they had some stakes in the experience that they just had. You know, it's a 45 minute experience, and you sort of need to learn as you go how to experience it. And I think that everyone will experience it differently. It's small audiences, the capacity is 25. So it really is an intimate group of strangers, most likely. And so what does it mean to do something, to build something with a group of strangers? And then how does that make you feel about them afterwards? That's what I'm really curious about. Like, will audience members walk out and say to, you know, the stranger across from them, hey, when we did this thing together, wasn't that awesome? And there, it'll create, you know, sort of that third act of conversation amongst people who might not have normally had a chance to interact. And also, I mean, the designers are just incredible. The actors, you know, including James and myself, are really just a talented group. And so I also want folks to feel like they've seen something unique and special, and that it is something that they've never seen before. So if any of that, if audience members walk out with any of that, I think we will have achieved our goal.
And if I may add just very briefly to that beautiful answer, Sam, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but the story that the play tells is a very well-known story, because something we figured out the first round, we had a wonderful play, short play that we used, but for the audience to get the rules of the game quickly enough to then play it and have fun and engage, we realized we needed a new version of a story people knew really well. It's sort of like, I mean, listen, I was a theater kid, so not great at science, but that whole idea in science in school, that if you're doing an experiment, you should only change one variable. We were like, if it's a story they don't know and a game they don't know, we're kind of tying their hands behind their back and putting a blindfold on them at the same time. And so we worked as a group to write a brand new version of a very well-known story, which I won't give away. But interestingly, the story's kind of core question is about, do you choose to live an examined life where you are an active participant, or do you choose a simpler, safer, quieter, more passive life in which you're not an active participant? And what are the pros and cons of those two things? So in a kind of double, not to be pretentious, but in like a double meta way, it's also really interesting because both the concerns of the characters on stage and the concerns of the audience or players that are participating is, are you active or are you passive? And so I think if people leave the theater and that thinking about intention versus passivity, maybe if that reframes their thinking about political stuff this year, or, you know, all the wars happening all over the world, and not saying that coming to our show is going to move the dial on any of that, but maybe if audience members are tuning a little more into the frequency of action and intention, that this piece has certainly made me think about that more. And so I would love if that was something that came up for others.
I love those ideas. That is fantastic. Well, James, I'm going to come to you for this last question of the first part. Who do you hope have access to the show?
Yeah, so we at What Will the Neighbors Say really focus on accessible ticketing, because I think, you know, a lot of companies talk a really big game about access, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how diverse your programming is. It doesn't matter how robust your community engagement is. If your tickets are $90, the reality is not everybody can pay that. So over the 8 years we've operated, we've managed to keep our average ticket price at $10, with most events being pay what you can and all community events being totally free. This was a kind of interesting show to approach from that angle, because there, with all of the, again, so not me and Sam's world, but all the projectors and all the tech and all the live coding and everything, it's just not a kind of black box off-Broadway show. So there was certain kind of, there was certain things that had to come into ticket pricing in a way that, again, as part of this kind of creative producing strategies, were new for us. So what we decided was to make students, seniors, and Sundays pay what you can. So if you're a student, college, high school, continued learning, you can pay what you can at any show. If you're a senior 65 plus, you can pay what you can for any show. And if you're just anybody who's not in those two groups and you want to see it and there's any access issues with the ticket price, you can come to any Sunday show in the run and also pay what you can. So for us, this is really a piece for everybody. You know, some of our work has more of a specifically immigrant focus. Some of it has a focus particularly on Latine communities in Brooklyn. This one really is for everyone. This is for any player. We kind of, it's a little bit raunchy. So we're encouraging 16 plus. Every kid is different. You know, audience members know their teenagers better than we do, but we would say 16 plus, I think. But that caveat aside, it is truly anybody can play, anybody can experience it. And if you're someone who does not have the capacity to pay more than $5, please still come. Just come on a Sunday.
And the only other thing I would add to that is it's also really great for groups of friends. I love how the interaction, yes, and making work with strangers is part of it. But because it really is made for an audience of 20, if you come with four friends, you all will be a quarter of the audience. And I think it is about how groups work together. And so I do hope that people come with like a little gaggle of friends, because it is meant to not be passive. It's meant to be active. And so I hope that groups do come.
Second part of our show, as always, we love to give our listeners a chance to get to know our guests a little bit better. And at this point, I mean, y'all are residents. We kept your bedroom warm. So I actually want to ask the two of you, kind of building off our previous question about access, you know, what changes are you both most excited for in the theater? And Sam, I'd love to start with you on that.
I have been really excited by the dynamic work that is coming out of the indie community here in New York. It thanks in no small part to the people at Indie Space, who are just an incredible organization, giving a place for indie theater makers, which, I mean, to me is anyone with a budget under $500,000. Like, what it costs to put on shows in New York is just insane. And the work that is coming out of, you know, the vast array of people in the indie theater community is just so exciting right now. It's dynamic, it's different, it's thought-provoking, and it's, you know, funny and searing and happy and sad and really thinking about what does theater look like. So that's been really exciting me, the work that is coming out of that community. I, of course, am biased, but I'm so happy that the New York City Fringe had 46 shows this year for folks to come to. And really what I want to see, or what I want to think about, is how do we get the New York local audience, of course, to those shows, people who live here and are, you know, constantly surrounded by, you can do anything on a Wednesday or Friday or Saturday night or Sunday afternoon. So how do we get those folks to the theater? But my question is, how do we get tourists and people from out of town to come to indie theater? Whether it's, you know, Culture Lab Long Island City, which is this incredible gallery performance space, but, you know, it only takes 15 minutes to get there from Midtown, but your average tourist might look out on it on a map and say, no way. How do we get folks from out of town to these incredible spaces like Culture Lab LIC, like Me Too 580, like the Mercury Store? How do we get them there? And that's sort of where I'm at and what I'm thinking. Because the work is incredible. The work is so good. And it can't just be for us, you know?
Yes, 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 1,000 times. James, how about you?
I think something really exciting for me, both as an actor, as a playwright, and as a neighbor, is this kind of emergence of something I don't think we've seen since before, really, Sam, in my time in New York, which is the idea of a commercially viable off-Broadway. So, you know, I think the American theater, and honestly, theater in Scotland as well, and maybe not in other parts of Europe, but certainly in the UK and the US, either you're a non-profit who's, you know, as we are, whose goal is to spend every penny you get every year. You know, if you want to get funding again, you have to zero out your bank each year, you know, really. Or you're on Broadway and your tickets are $200. And if you're not in Bolt 2 and you're a non-profit, either, as Sam said, you're a big one with real estate holdings and huge development teams, or you're sort of a small but mighty, scrappy indie company. And what feels exciting to me about, you look at shows like Oh Mary that is running right now, Cola Scola's piece that keeps extending and has already, according to the New York Times, already recouped. Those producers took a risk on a very off-Broadway piece, put it up. It has a dynamic pricing model, so it was cheaper before it got popular, and now the price is increasing, though I know they have other accessibility measures. I'm not sure exactly what they are. But, you know, that show, The Little Shop of Horrors revival, Job, that's playing right now, I believe, at Soho Playhouse, the idea of a third option that isn't, hey, we're a non-profit, our goal is to make no money. B, we're a Broadway theater, our only goal is to make money. This kind of option C, which is make your work, have it be good, have it be experimental, have it be challenging, take all of the best of downtown and off. But also there's nothing wrong with making a living. And it's not glamorous to not make a living. And it's not, it doesn't denigrate your artistry if your project dares to make money. And I think that something that is interesting for the neighbors as a kind of one of those small but mighty indie nonprofits is how do we, similar to, you know, on a much bigger scale, what the public did with Hamilton, what are the avenues for companies like ours to have commercially successful shows and to even just start thinking in those terms without losing our core values as a nonprofit, of which we're very proud and committed. So I don't know where it's all going, but I think this kind of emergence of off-Broadway as a viable producing format is really interesting, because I think some nonprofits, when you look at the staffing cuts and programmatic cuts happening at the big nonprofits, there was maybe a little bit of complacency in our field. And then you look at Broadway, how many shows are closing without recouping? Was there a little bit of complacency in their field? And so this kind of number three option just feels very juicy and exciting for the field at large.
I love that. I love all those ideas. Well, I know we've had you on several times, but I still want to ask my favorite question and keep digging in your memories and ask, you know, do you have another favorite theater memory?
Yes, I love this question. I hope you weren't bored with our answers by now.
Yeah, so what is another of your favorite theater memories?
I was actually, I was cheating. I was thinking about this on the walk to the workspace today because I knew we were going to be asked. And I realized last time I messed up and told the same story twice. So I have a new one for you. 2019, we did an incredible piece called Agua Vida Tierra that was made with Puerto Rican immigrants here and folks on the island. We moved to Puerto Rico as a company for 2 months. In the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, we conducted 30 interviews with, you know, such a range of folks, everything from unhoused people to politicians, like the full gamut of folks there about the hurricane, about American imperialism and the impact that has on Puerto Rico and continues to have Puerto Rican self-identity as a country that's been colonized first by Spain and now by the US. So really, really rich, complicated piece. We devised it with a fantastic group of performers here in the city and presented it at Me 2580, another great kind of off-Broadway space in Brooklyn. But the lighter or funnier part of it is our incredible set designer, Diana Davila, built a coffin for us because the devising group, you know, long story short, we decided to stage it at a funeral for everyone who had passed in Hurricane Maria. That was the kind of wider thematic context. But the reason the memory is so beloved to me is, I'm not joking, Andrew, we took this coffin on the L train. And now, it was a wooden coffin. Obviously, it didn't have a bottom. It's not a real coffin. I don't want to horrify any of your listeners. Nobody has ever been in it or will ever be in it. But when you see it from the outside, it looks like a coffin. But we had used our whole transport budget getting everything else there, and the coffin hadn't been finished quite on time. And so four of us had to carry it on the L train out to Gowanus. And I think we could afford to Uber from a certain point or something like that. I don't remember exactly why, but rush hour on a Wednesday afternoon, four of us with a coffin. That made me laugh my absolute head off when I remembered it this morning.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine? Even in New York, you know, in the on a New York.
That would have ended up on, like, you know, Subway Live or What Is New York or something. It's just like, it's a
Psych, I know. Thank God we were ever so slightly before that ubiquity, because that really could have been quite something. I mean, I'm surprised nobody called the police, but I mean, we were all fine.
They have a Thanksgiving dinner on the L train every year, you know? So, I mean,
that's true. So why not a funeral?
Right. He lived as he died on the subway, on the L train.
On the L train.
Well, speaking of Me Too 580 and Theater Me Too, when I was, graciously, James went first, so I had time to think about this. One of my favorite theater memories, or just one of the most impactful pieces I've seen, was Utopian Hotline that Theater Me Too did. I mean, it must have been the fall of 2021, and it was the first piece of theater that I saw post-pandemic, and it was this incredible non-narrative performance installation. You took off your shoes, you sat down, also a small group of like 15 or 20 people, and they had set up a hotline that people could literally call asking the question, what does utopia mean to you? And so they had collected all of these voicemails as source material and then proceeded to do this installation piece where they did music made out of rotary phones and fax machines, beautiful songs. It was also investigating the 1977 launch of the satellite probe with the golden record on it, so that if it's ever found by aliens, it would tell them about us. I don't know. This piece was truly incredible. You had headphones on in your own world, but sharing space at the same time. And it was really a beautiful question to think about right as we were emerging out of the pandemic. And that show has really stuck with me. And at least as the way I approach Third Law, I think it was a big influence on my thought process and on how we gather and what it means to be together. And the folks at Theater Me Too have been such incredible supporters of ours. We did the beta test of Third Law at their space, Me Too 580, as part of the Gowanus Artists at Home initiative. Justin and Ruben are just such incredible artists and collaborators. And that piece has really stuck with me. And for anyone interested, I'm pretty sure that they released some of the voicemails and the music as an album that you can listen to on Bandcamp.
Yeah, they did.
Very cool. Yeah, I love that show.
That sounds amazing. I feel like I heard something about that and I have to go more into it, but that sounds incredible. Both of those memories are amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those. As we wrap things up here, I would love to know, do any of you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline we might be able to plug?
Well, one exciting thing that we have coming up also at Culture Lab LIC is we're going to be doing our annual fundraiser, not for us, but for another social justice not-for-profit organization. We've been doing these since we started. They have ranged in form from concerts to drag nights to album release parties. And so this year we're going to be doing a reading of the play that we wrote with students at the Queens College Gender, Love, and Sexuality Alliance using their archives. And so we're going to be doing a reading of that at Culture Lab LIC in June to raise funds for the Gender, Love, and Sexuality Alliance at Queens College. The CUNY system has been going through some very brutal budget cuts, and we want to support their work and that club that is so important to the students at Queens College. So we're going to be doing that in June and are just really, really jazzed about it. More to come. We're still putting it.
Absolutely. And for any of your immigrant listeners, separate to the company, but still related to our mission, I think, I'm very proud to be on the curation and production team for the Global Forms Theatre Festival at Rattlestick. I won't be presenting work this year. I mean, that would be a horrible example of nepotism, obviously, as a curator. But we are taking applications from any immigrant visa-seeking artist working in the US for seed grants that are open through April 29th to fund new work. There's also going to be panels, mixers, and a special production created by an all-immigrant team. So everyone check it out who's listening to come support work made by immigrants in New York, specifically immigrant listeners. Check it out, apply, get involved, and kind of come and join this global network, because being an immigrant can be lonely. And community is there. So check that out on Rattlestick's website.
Those sound amazing. Two great productions we've got to keep our fingers on the pulse of. So that's amazing. And a great lead-in to my final question, of course, which is if our listeners would like more information about Third Law or about either of you or even What Will the Neighbors Say, maybe they'd like to reach out to all of you. How can they do so?
The best way to reach us is through our website, wwtns.org, or our Instagram at wwtnstheater with an R-E. You can also email us, outreach@wwtns.org. And for tickets to Culture Lab and Third Law, you can grab them on our website, on Culture Lab's website, using Eventbrite. That is the best way to get tickets. We've got a number of tickets still available, a few performances that are close to selling out. As I said, it's only a 20-person audience. So if you're interested in joining us, we would love to have you get those tickets now so you can have your pick of the show that you want to see.
Amazing. Well, James, Sam, thank you as always for taking the time to speak with me. I feel like you bring something better and better and better each time, and you have not disappointed with this great show. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having us. This is always such a treat.
Andrew, thank you. Love chatting with you. It's so fabulous, and we're really jazzed about all this work coming up.
I am as well. This is exciting. Thank you both. My guests today have been the co-artistic directors of What Will the Neighbors Say, Clements and Sam Hood Adrian, who are part of the production of Third Law, which is being presented by What Will the Neighbors Say and Culture Lab. It's happening May 9th through the 26th at Culture Lab LIC. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting eventbrite.com. We also have some contact information for our guests, which we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But you have to run. Don't walk. Get your tickets now. They are selling fast, and you don't want to miss this incredible show, this incredible experience. It's Third Law, happening May 9th through the 26th at Culture Lab LIC. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.